by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We're going to be covering our analysis of the debate that took place last Thursday night. It was Fox News Network, and Megyn Kelly was one of the primary questioners, and we're going to be playing some clips, and then I'm going to be making some comments on those clips. I hope everyone had a chance to view this debate. It was rather raucous at times. And Christie was in there. And of course, Trump, you know, they had to go after the Trump. It looked like it was structured to make Jeb Bush look pretty good. Kasich looked pretty good. Ted Cruz came on hard line right, like he normally does, about immigration and so forth. But at least, what I would have to say after viewing this and looking at it, is that we did get a glimpse into their personal opinions and so forth, and what they would do if they were would be elected president or in the office of the presidency. And it was insightful, and especially Chris Christie's you could say give and take with Rand Paul. Rand Paul has stood up on the Senate floor time after time, and has stood and tried to defend Americans' liberties and freedoms. And that little give and take with Chris Christie, I think we'll be playing it in a few minutes, was very, very insightful. This first clip is going to be Megyn Kelly asking, asking Trump about some insulting things that he said on Twitter about women and big heavy set women and things like that. And I think you're going to find this insightful. They tried to set Trump up. He comes back with a response that I don't think they had anticipated. But why don't you listen and see what you think?
Thank you, sir. Mr. Trump. One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account...
Only Rosie several... O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't. Your Twitter...
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble. We don't win anymore. We lose to China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. And frankly, what I say, and oftentimes it's fun, it's kidding, we have a good time, what I say is what I say. And honestly, Megan, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've been very nice to you, although I could probably maybe not be based on the way you have treated me, but I wouldn't do that. But you know what? We need strength, we need energy, we need quickness, and we need brain in this country to turn it around. That I can tell you right now.
Trump has a way of saying what's on people's minds. You know, Megyn Kelly hit him with this thing about insulting women. Of course, he deflected it on to Rosie McDonald, and then she came back and she said, wait, hold it a second. I want to put it on record that there was more said than just about Rosie McDonald, many other women possibly. I didn't hear any of these comments. So I'm just commenting on this, on the debate that occurred Thursday. And this is Saturday, the 8th. Anyway, it looked like initially, and we're going to play another clip, I forgot to play, and it was the first shot out of the box on trying to get a commitment and an oath from all of the different, candidates. But anyway, it looks like this thing was structured in this way just quickly, and then we'll go back to another clip, at the very beginning. I just forgot to play that first, and then we'll make comments on that. But they went after Trump. Trump is like a loose cannon in the Republican ranks, and he can't be controlled that easily. He's very insulting, but he also stimulates a debate. This is what's interesting about Trump's entry into this. Now, some of the negatives, though, is that it's taking away from some of the leadership that Rand Paul had exhibited earlier in the year and last year, 2014 and 15, when you'll hear some clips later on by Rand Paul, and he's really one of the few anti-establishment Republican candidates that's standing up and saying things that the Republican leadership should be saying themselves. The leadership of the Republican Party has changed. Back in 2012, I attended the National Convention. I reported on it out there. And I saw them take away many of his father's, Ron Paul's, delegates based upon changes in the rules of party rules about qualifying and seating what they call delegates and so forth. So there's a mainline Republican power base that really did not want Ron Paul at all because of his anti-Federal Reserve or his in the Fed, you know, sentiments. Now, Rand is different. He's more, a little more hawkish, see, in the military. And he's more friendlier to Israel than maybe Ron Paul was. Ron Paul was more, let's pull back totally. But Rand Paul also says the same thing. But what they try to do here with this question, you know what I mean, let's get back to Trump here, was to knock him out, to make him look bad. And he came back with political correctness. And I think there's a lot of people that are totally fed up with all this political correctness. Instead of, they're saying things like, oh, you don't use the word obese, say larger than normal or something like that. Obese is obese. I'm sorry. We've got just a bunch of people in the country that are really heavily overweight, and that's causing all kinds of health problems. So call it like it is, you know, and let's don't beat around the bush. But anyway, those are sort of my sentiment. Now coming up next is that clip that I should have played right off the bat. It was the first thing, question that was asked to the panelists, candidates here. And it was about them taking an oath to supporting fully whoever was the Republican candidate and not to run on a third party basis. And you'll see and you'll hear what Trump does on this. And what he says is a little bit confusing at times, but why don't you listen to this clip now and see what you think. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We're going to be covering our analysis of the debate that took place last Thursday night. It was Fox News Network, and Megyn Kelly was one of the primary questioners. And we're going to be playing some clips, and then I'm going to be making some comments on those clips. I hope everyone had a chance to view this debate. It was rather raucous at times. And Christie was in there. And of course, Trump, you know, they had to go after the Trump. It looked like it was structured to make Jeb Bush look pretty good. Kasich looked pretty good. Ted Cruz came on hard line right, like he normally does, about immigration and so forth. But at least, what I would have to say after viewing this and looking at it is that we did get a glimpse into their personal opinions and so forth, and what they would do if they were would be elected president or in the office of the presidency. And it was insightful, and especially Chris Christie's you could say give and take with Rand Paul. Rand Paul has stood up on the Senate floor time after time and has stood and tried to defend Americans' liberties and freedoms. And that little give and take with Chris Christie, I think we'll be playing it in a few minutes, was very, very insightful. This first clip is going to be Megyn Kelly asking, asking Trump about some insulting things that he said on Twitter about women and big heavy set women and things like that. And I think you're going to find this insightful. They tried to set Trump up. He comes back with a response that I don't think they had anticipated. But why don't you listen and see what you think?
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account...
Only Rosie O'Donnell.
No, it wasn't.
Thank you.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble. We don't win anymore. We lose to China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. And frankly, what I say, and oftentimes it's fun, it's kidding, we have a good time, what I say is what I say. And honestly, Megyn, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've been very nice to you, although I could probably maybe not be based on the way you have treated me, but I wouldn't do that. But you know what? We need strength, we need energy, we need quickness, and we need brain in this country to turn it around. That I can tell you right now.
Trump has a way of saying what's on people's minds. You know, Megyn Kelly hit him with this thing about insulting women. Of course, he deflected it onto Rosie McDonald, and then she came back and she said, wait, hold it a second. I want to put it on record that there was more said than just about Rosie McDonald, meaning other women possibly. I didn't hear in these comments. So I'm just commenting on this, on the debate that occurred Thursday. And this is Saturday, the 8th. Anyway, it looked like initially, and we're going to play another clip, I forgot to play, and it was the first shot out of the box on trying to get a commitment and an oath from all of the different, candidates. But anyway, it looks like this thing was structured in this way just quickly, and then we'll go back to another clip, at the very beginning. I just forgot to play that first, and then we'll make comments on that. But they went after Trump. Trump is like a loose cannon in the Republican ranks, and he can't be controlled that easily. He's very insulting, but he also stimulates a debate. This is what's interesting about Trump's entry into this. Now, some of the negatives, though, is that it's taking away from some of the leadership that Rand Paul had exhibited earlier in the year and last year, 2014 and 15, when you'll hear some clips later on by Rand Paul, and he's really one of the few anti-establishment Republican candidates that's standing up and saying things that the Republican leadership should be saying themselves. The leadership of the Republican Party has changed. Back in 2012, I attended the national convention. I reported on it out there. And I saw them take away many of his father's, Ron Paul's, delegates based upon changes in the rules of party rules about qualifying and seating what they call delegates and so forth. So there's a mainline Republican power base that really did not want Ron Paul at all because of his anti-Federal Reserve or his in the Fed, you know, sentiments. Now, Rand is different. He's more, a little more hawkish, see, in the military. And he's more friendlier to Israel than maybe Ron Paul was. Ron Paul was more, let's pull back totally. But Rand Paul also says the same thing. But what they try to do here with this question, you know what I mean, let's get back to Trump here, was to knock him out, to make him look bad. And he came back with political correctness. And I think there's a lot of people that are totally fed up with all this political correctness. Instead of, they're saying things like, oh, you don't use the word obese, say larger than normal or something like that. Obese is obese. I'm sorry. We've got just a bunch of people in the country that are really heavily overweight, and that's causing all kinds of health problems. So call it like it is, you know, and let's don't beat around the bush. But anyway, those are sort of my sentiment. Now coming up next is that clip that I should have played right off the bat. It was the first thing, question that was asked to the panelists, candidates here. And it was about them taking an oath to supporting fully whoever was the Republican candidate and not to run on a third party basis. And you'll see and you'll hear what Trump does on this. And what he says is a little bit confusing at times, but why don't you listen to this clip now and see what you think.
Gentlemen, we know how much you love hand-raising questions. So we promise this is the only one. The only one. Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump. So, Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary
debate. I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will give the nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an independent run would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely another Clinton. You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge?
I cannot say. I have to respect the person that, if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge I will not run as an independent. But and I am discussing it with everybody, but I'm, you know, talking about a lot of leverage. We want to win, and we will win. But I want to win as the Republican. I want to run as the Republican nominee.
So tonight you can't say if another one of these...
This is what's wrong. I mean, okay. This is what's wrong. He buys and sells politicians of all stripes. He's already, hey, look, he's already hedging his bet on the Clintons, okay? So if he doesn't run as a Republican, maybe he supports Clinton or maybe runs as an independent.
Okay.
But I'd say that he's already hedging his bets because he's used to buying politicians.
Well, I've given him plenty of money.
If just to be clear, you can't make it. We're going to move on.
Okay. Did you hear that pretty clearly? What he's saying here is that basically it sounded a little bit off the way he, you know what I mean, explained himself. But basically, he's going to keep all of his options open. He's committing himself to running for the Republican nomination at this time. This is Trump speaking, and I'm paraphrasing it. But you can go back and pick up this on demand later. You can go to thesecrettruth.com. That's our broadcast site, thesecrettruth.com. But what goes on here is that he goes off into this explanation, and basically he's the only one that has not committed to supporting the Republican nominee, nor has he, ignored or foreclosed out the possibility that he could run third party. The Republican Party, like I was saying earlier, they're not friendly to Trump as a candidate. The chairman of the Republican Party said the other day that he might be good for the party, but I think that was just putting a face on the relationship right now. I don't really think that they want him in any form, fashion, or way to be the candidate for the Republican nomination in 2016, and they could cut his throat at the national convention with delegates or anything else that he failed to secure. There are people saying that he's a ringer, that actually he's been run in there to diminish Rand Paul's chances, and that appears a little bit in this first debate. This has diminished, taken a little bit of the shine and focus and spotlight off of Rand Paul. And so that could be possibly one of the techniques that they're using here to knock out Rand Paul's chances. That could very well be the technique, like I said just moments ago, of trying to knock out Rand Paul's chances. The next clip up is Ted Cruz. I personally have not supported Ted Cruz. His wife, Heidi Cruz, has a background with Goldman Sachs, and she worked for Robert Zoller in the White House on some foreign affairs, trade type issues. And so that's enough right there for me to say. And she also just stepped down recently from Goldman Sachs, managing over $1 billion worth of energy securities in Houston. So they're all tied. Ted Cruz is tied to the oil industry and Goldman Sachs and all that. That's why. So, but this clip now on Ted Cruz will tell you how hard line he is on immigration. And I can't say that I don't support some of these views, because it's out of control and he does want to take control back. And so I can't say that I disagree with him on that basis. So listen to this one about his hard line, and it has to do with this recent killing out in California by this illegal alien of this lady out there.
Senator Cruz, some 1,400 people submitted on this very hot topic of illegal immigration on Facebook, and a number of them were about the murder of Kate Steinle in San Francisco, allegedly shot down by an illegal. Doug Betancourt sent this question. Will you support Kate Steinle's law, which would impose a mandatory 5-year prison term for an illegal who's deported and then returns to this country? And will you defund sanctuary cities for violating federal law?
Chris, absolutely yes. And not only will I support it, I have authored Kate's law in the United States Senate and filed that legislation. I tried to get the Senate to vote to pass Kate's law on the floor of the Senate just 1 week ago, and the leader of our own party blocked a vote on Kate's law. You know, there was reference made to our leaders being stupid. It's not a question of stupidity. It's that they don't want to enforce the immigration laws. That there are far too many in the Washington cartel that support amnesty. President Obama's talked about fundamentally transforming this country. There's 7 billion people across the face of the globe, many of whom want to come to this country. If they come legally, great, but if they come illegally and they get amnesty, that is how we fundamentally change this country. And it really is striking. A majority of the candidates on this stage have supported amnesty. I have never supported amnesty, and I led the fight against Chuck Schumer's Gang of Eight amnesty legislation in the Senate.
This debate on Thursday night did give us an idea of the different candidates. You've got, you know, Ted Cruz on the right, and then you've got Way on the left back over in here. You've got Jeb is much more liberal than he depicts or portrays himself, see. And so, and then you've got a statist in there. My gosh, Chris Christie is quite the statist, and he's for government authority and control. And, I think some of his problems up there in New Jersey would illustrate that he's just too much of a statist and believer in his authority, and he's a prosecutor, and then that George Washington debacle up there in New Jersey. And so, I think there's problems with Chris Christie revolving around associated with a statist view. A statist view would be someone that favors the state over the individual. And I think that's where Rand Paul, and Chris Christie are on extreme opposite ends. Rand Paul is certainly for personal liberty, and Chris Christie is for the state. That's what it appears to be. And that's why these debates can draw people out, and you can get a better idea of where these people are really coming from. We've got two more clips to go, and then we'll move on to some other news and comments. But this is very, very interesting debate. It's the first debate that the Republicans had, and it was Thursday, August the 6th, 2015, and I'm doing analysis after it. I listened to it and viewed it the night of the debate, and then I've looked at several times and began to understand their positions and so forth. But there were some good questions asked about there, and they had contradicted themselves in the past. I think on immigration policy and so forth there. They got caught up on some things. But anyway, this next clip is a question to Rand Paul about same-sex marriage. And it's a very, very surprising answer, but it goes along with his father's teachings to him about states' rights. And I think that's what it illustrates more than anything. So listen to this and see what you think.
Senator Paul. In the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage, Carol Fox on Facebook wants to know the following. Quote, what will you do to ensure Christians are not prosecuted for speaking out against gay marriage? And will Christians be forced to conduct business that conflicts with their religious beliefs?
Look, I don't want my marriage or my guns registered in Washington. And if people have an opinion that's a religious opinion that is heartfully felt, obviously they should be allowed to practice that, and no government should interfere with them. One of the things that really got to me was the thing in Houston where you had the government, the mayor, actually trying to get the sermons of ministers. When the government tries to invade the church to enforce its own opinion on marriage, that's when it's time to resist.
I think he says it about as clearly. He says he doesn't want his guns or his marriage to be recorded in Washington, to be registered in Washington. So he said, I don't want my guns or my marriage to be registered in Washington, is what he said. So he's definitely on the state's right side. That's where Ron Paul was consistently the same. He never changed his views on states' rights and so forth. And that was a big conflict that he had with all of the representatives and senators up there. Is they're all, once they get in the government, they go to Washington D.C., they want more power, more money, more retirements, la-da-da-da-da, and there's more and more probably kickbacks occurring up from the lobbyists or whatever, flying them around all over the world. So that's basically what we're talking about here. Okay, coming up next will be the final closing comments of Rand Paul. And I'll tell you why I focused in on Rand Paul more than anyone else, is that he has the guts, the literal guts, to stand up and voice opinions that the average American wishes that they could go there themselves and just stand up and just, you know, let it flow out loud, screaming, you know, their disappointments in what's happened in this country, and especially in the police state side. And that, and Rand Paul has stood on the floor of the Senate time and time again to defend our individual freedoms and rights. And this is where he shines the most. None of the other candidates even brought up Bill of Rights or rights or liberties or anything else, Thursday night, but Rand Paul did. So we're going to end, this particular segment of the show, this program, the first half basically, with, Rand Paul's closing statements. Here we go now with his Rand Paul's closing statements.
Senator Paul, closing statement.
I'm a different kind of Republican. I've introduced a 5-year balanced budget. I've introduced the largest tax cut in our history. I stood for 10.5 hours on the Senate floor to defend your right to be left alone. But I've also gone to Chicago, I've gone to Detroit, I've been to Ferguson, I've been to Baltimore, because I want our party to be bigger, better, and bolder, and I'm the only one that leads Hillary Clinton in 5 states that were won by President Obama. I'm a different kind of Republican.
The second half of this hour is going to have to do with Francis Schur's writings for aandetruth.org, which is a website about 9/11. And a few months ago, I discovered these written as articles over a period of time on A&E site. And anyway, she sent me a copy of those the other day, which the links for right now, the hot links that I put up on the secrettruth.com site, will enable our listening audience to go into our site, thesecrettruth.com, and click on those links. And there's about 17, 18 different articles that she's written over a number of months. And so those are very interesting articles in the sense that she approaches 9/11 as a problem of cognition and realization and denial and so forth. And so many of her, assertions and opinions are well-founded and are well-grounded. She's a MA and then LPC, and she's performed in-depth analysis addressing a key issue of our time. Why do people become silent or worse about 9/11? And then she wrote an essay about it. And she seemed to state in there that it's human tendencies towards denial in order to avoid the discomfort of cognitive dissonance. Indeed, resistance to information that substantially challenges our worldview is the rule rather than the exception. Ms. Schur explains, this is so because fear is the emotion that underlies most of the negative reactions towards 9/11 skeptics' information. and Ms. Schur addresses the many types of fear that involved in how they may tie into the sacred truth of American exceptionalism. She puts the American exceptionalism in there also. But she has quite a few parts to her writing, and you can go in on my site, The Secret Truth, and she'll send it to you too. If you want to put it up on another site, there's about 18 different parts to her article. And it's very important article, in my opinion, in the sense that for the first time that I've seen on the web or anywhere, it takes many of the factors and factions and disciplines, psychology, physiology, anthropology, sociology. And it takes a little bits and pieces from all of these and begins to explain, okay, of why people become silent and so forth. And it's just mind-boggling what she's come up with. And also, in her articles here, what's really good about her articles is that enables the people that are, say, experts in those different disciplines, whether it's sociology, psychology, anthropology, or whatever, philosophy. She pulls on philosophical ideas and thoughts, sociology, you know, teachings and so forth, and concepts, psychology, and so, because it involves all of this. Years ago, Colin Ross, who is an expert in DID, okay, which is dissociative identity disorder, okay. I had him on my program a couple of times. He's out of Dallas. He's a world's authority in this. The previous name for this DID would be multiple personality disorder. And so what he's come up with, I asked him a question at the end of one of my interviews with him. And I told him, I asked him, I said, do you believe that 9/11, encompassed some kind of a traumatic, you know what I mean, conditioning that would have, induced a form or a degree of dissociation? And he said, yes, I believe that you would be correct in stating that. And this is Colin Ross, and he's quite an expert in the area. But anyway, I started thinking in these areas after 9/11. I began to really understand, or try to understand, why the American public would not wake up. It was very hurtful for the average American to accept this was a catastrophic event. It was overwhelming in scope. It was just too big an event, a tragic and catastrophic event for most people to process. When they saw these big, large buildings coming down, and then it was reported almost immediately that there were jihadists on board those planes, and they crashed into those buildings and caused the structural, you know, fall to occur and so forth. And then, you know, the public was just lapping this thing up. And then there were these four Jersey girls that forced an investigation and a hearing on. They weren't going to hold any kind of an in-depth investigation in this until what they call the Jersey girls raised their objection to not holding some kind of a commission and so forth. So they held this 9/11 commission, and they put everybody on there, and they went through the motions, but they never really pursued some of the real insider information that they could have. And as a result, we got a lot less, you could say, truth out of that commission than we should have. Frances Schur at the end gets into, let me just tick off some of the names of, you know, some of her articles. There's a preface and introduction. I read a little bit of that. Diffusions of Innovations, part two. Part three, Obeying and Believing Authority. This is where we're brought up and conditioned to believe what the authority is telling us. Double think, why do people become silent and so forth. Part four, part five, denial and cognitive dissonance. This is one of the things we covered just at the beginning of this segment. Conformity. People want to conform to an overall view, and they don't want people to think that they're an oddball or something. Groupthink. The propaganda is so overwhelming on this 9/11 that it got all the American public believing about the same type of conclusions. Brain research, he does that, part eight, brain research, part nine, brain research, morality, part 10, terror management theory, and systems justification theory. See, she gets really into this. Part 12, signal detection theory, part 13, prior knowledge of state crimes against democracy and deep politics. I think she pulls in some fine professors on that part of the article. Learn helplessness. She has some clinical analysis on that and testing research. The abuse syndrome, dissociation is what I was talking about with Colin Ross just a few minutes ago. Is one of her part. Let's go back. Part 13, prior knowledge of state crimes. Part 14, learn helplessness. Part 15, the abuse syndrome. Part 16, dissociation. Part 17, the false self and excessive identification with the U.S. Now, see, in my recent book, The False Self, I have a treatment of that in that. And then part 18, American essentialism and nationalist faith. We've been built up from grade school or kindergarten or whatever. We pledge allegiance to the flag. We believe in this country. We believe in America. And those are good and noble things to believe in. But the problem with what has happened in this country is that there have been elitists at the very top level, and the banking community dominates, in the Federal Reserve being privately owned and so forth. And what they've taken over the management and control of this country, and many of the media giants are under their control. So what do we get through the media and all these mainline, you know what I mean, television networks, and even Fox is doing their deal. As you could listen to the clips that I played earlier, they can structure stuff to come out with certain, you know what I mean, conclusions that can be reached. But we're becoming more street smart. We can come out of this deluded state if we really look at this like this Francis Schur, these articles. And if we can take and look at them and begin to try to overcome our predisposed conditioned state, that's what I write about in the Be Good to Yourself book, is that from the day that we're born, we're beginning to interact with our parents. And in that interaction, they are seeding into us and inducing into us a worldly view. They are suffering themselves from hate and resenting and all these emotional things that come with human nature. So they induce into us some very fine concepts and ideas and morals and so forth. But at the same time also, they're inducing into us what they're suffering from, and they've never been able to overcome exactly or be able to see and perceive exactly what they're burdened by. See, it's not that easy to see what's going on exactly in this world. In my book, I come out with Know Thyself, and I add two more: Know Thy Thoughts, and then Know Thy World. See, and to know thyself, if you're in a conditioned state and with all this predisposed worldviews and so forth, it's really difficult to begin to see yourself. It's very, very difficult. You have to draw upon friends and go take some personality tests and stuff. They can be helpful too. Ask friends what they like or don't like about you. You know, people that you can rely on and so forth. But it's very difficult. The second one that I added, Know Thy Thoughts, is that you have to try to begin to observe your thoughts as they're real time unfolding. And as those thoughts are real time unfolding, then you can possibly begin to awaken to the way that these thoughts and this system of thinking, the Cardian, Descartes, okay, came up with, I think, therefore, I am, see. And he set out a way of trying to get to truth and so forth. And that was one of his outstanding aphorisms or statements or sayings, I guess. I think, therefore, I am, see. Trying to get around the philosophical questions of existence and consciousness and so forth. What I've been able to do is, this is why Francis Schur's writings speak to me at a different level than maybe our listening audience, is that in the 90s I began to get into the delusional aspect of our human nature, and then I discovered a writer that came up with You're Not So Smart. We've interviewed him. He's, if you go to The Secret Truth, you'll be able to go and listen to that that interview. But his idea was just really what I stated what years ago was the delusion had the delusion. What he states is that we are unaware of how unaware we are, but we're saying the same basic thing, is that basically human nature and the way we are and the way we perceive and the way our consciousness works and our memory and our interaction with our fellow human beings in a social, cultural type of situations result in transgressions being committed, those that we commit against others. And then you could say there's transgressions that others commit against us. And so out of this comes a lot of hate and resentment, see. So we get back to this 9/11. How could that have traumatized us? Well, what that played upon was they started characterizing it as this foreign enemy that attacked America. So there was a focus there of all those people dying, and the catastrophic event was overwhelming anyway. So you had a lot of trauma-based programming that came out of this, but individuals, the American public, began to hate these jihadists and these Arabs and these Islamists, see. And so we had to focus that, and our leadership immediately took that hatred and focused it to Afghanistan and then to Iraq, see. And we're going to go after those people and punish them and just wipe them out off the face of the earth. And that's basically what we tried to do. If you look at 9/11, you must get back and you must start reviewing 9/11. And I'm begging you out there to try to look at this. Go back and look at the evidence. Go to 911truth.org. That's a site that has 40 different questions on it that are very, very insightful and instructive as to how to get a handle on this. But the problem is, like Francis Schur was saying, it's hard to get people to even begin to look at it because they have to overcome this cognitive dissonance and all these other preconditioned things about American exceptionalism. Oh, our leadership would never do anything like 9/11. So it cannot be a 9/11 cannot be an inside job. Yes, it can be. And there's evidence out there that 9/11 was an inside job. Alex Jones tried for years to break this issue with American public and trying to put it on the table. But he was against the same psychological problems and human nature that still exist today on this. They're traveling overseas last year. I got the opinion that the foreigners in these distant countries, in Europe especially, and in England and so forth, in Ireland, they believe they know more about 9/11 being an inside job than Americans do. Americans have been shut off, see, by the mainline media. And I'll give you an example. Fukushima. Farrell Montgomery and I produced, along with Randall Mock's help, produced two different Fukushima conferences in 2014. We got a smattering of a few dozen people to either event. I felt so compelled after the first one, I went ahead and worked on getting a second one done within 6 months. We just could not get the public. And so when you look around at what the government is doing and what Japan is doing, they're very powerful. Media was hyping the opposite. No, we can control it and all this. But today, the Fukushima is a utter disaster, not only to Japan, the mainland there, but to the North Pacific, and it's beginning to impact our West Coast. Our leadership here, along with the Japanese leadership, we feel, totally put a blackout on the truth about Fukushima, hoping that they could get a handle on it. I guess they were not realistic in evaluating what they could do with Fukushima, with three reactors melting down and the cores melting down underneath the buildings, and they don't know how deep they are in there. These are the problems that we have with the media in this country and with our government. See? So we get back to these series of articles by Frances Shure, and she's a fine lady, that's for sure. That's for sure, Frances Shure. But anyway, and they are on our site, and we would appreciate if you could come in to thesecrettruth.com, and you can just, you know, highlight that list and save it to your own computer and then distribute it through emails or whatever. She's not limiting the distribution on this. She wants to get this out to as many people as possible. Now, my closing comments over about the last 6.5 minutes here would have to do with another theory. A&E is who she's been working with, and they have the thermite type theory, that it's a nanotechnology explosive. Actually, thermite is more heat creating and can cut through giant steel beams and so forth. And so they're sort of coming from that. That's one school that's you could say organized around A&E, 911truth.org. And then there's another lady out there by the name of Judy Wood that has a theory that is so far advanced ahead of everybody that that's what makes it so difficult to even talk to people about. But her book is Where Did the Towers Go? You know? And I think that's well worth Judy Wood and, Where Did the Buildings Go? I think, or Where Did the Towers Go? But, And her hypothesis or theory and so forth, or assertions, are totally, hey, you have to reach into probably secret technology that we have, see. Her theory is that there was a dustification process that occurred, and there were some kind of a directed energy type of weapon systems that was focused in on that area. Now, when you look at her book, and she sent me her book, and I need to get her on as soon as I can. But Jesse Ventura a few years ago did interview her. So go in and do Jesse Off the Grid, I think is his, and go in there and look at that, and then Google it. And she has a presentation to a group over in the Netherlands also. But Judy Wood's theory or assertions or so forth is that they were able to take some of the solid materials and reduce them down to their elements. In other words, they would take, and she calls it dustification in her writings and so forth. The book that I received from her is about 350, 400 pages, but what is really overwhelmingly you could say convincing to me is she has the conversations that occurred within the North Tower there, there were about 12, approximately 12 firemen that were trapped, in the North Tower in a elevator, you could say stairway, okay? Elevator and stairway, about four stories tall. They were in pitch dark there right after both towers fell. And then It took them hours for the dust to begin to clear out, and when the dust finally was blown away and they could get light in there, they looked up, and the whole building was gone. This was an overwhelming convinced them that there that and they and the building was not on top of them. The what finally the mass from the buildings that finally was on ground level was not anywhere close to what it should have been had there just been a destruction and a collapse of the buildings. So Judy Wood is saying there was far advanced technology used, and only it could have only been a 9/11 inside job with the technology that was only available to our government and so forth. So that's what she's saying. Well, I want to direct you back to this program. The first half, basically, we did analysis of the debate that occurred last Thursday night. And we had some Rand Paul stuff in there. We put him in there. We sort of showcased him a little bit because he's a fine person and stands for what's right in this world. He stands on that Senate floor, and he stands on the Bill of Rights. And we wouldn't have had the Bill of Rights had we not had Thomas Jefferson and George Mason and others. They held out for a Bill of Rights, and the rest of the states were gonna. The Constitution was passed without the Bill of Rights. It was finally ratified, but the what they call the Anti-Federalists forced those leaders in the other states to take up at the first meeting of Congress and to make amendments. They got them down to about 10, and that's why they're called amendments. So the Bill of Rights are the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And they did agree to attach those 10 amendments to the Constitution. But without that, we wouldn't have anything that would be close, approximate a republic. And that's what Rand Paul and others like him and Ted Cruz, I must state that I like basically what he stands for and talks about. I just don't like some of the past associations that he and his wife have. So I'm not going to stand up and support him, and I'm going to state it publicly and why. But anyway, go back pull that up. The second hour will be with an interview that I had on a man that wrote a book about Christie. Okay? And that's coming up this second hour. So if you want to hold on, don't switch your dial. Stay with us, and you can listen to that go from there. We must awaken. We must come out of this sleep state. I know that sounds so boring, doesn't it? Come out of the sleep state. But that's what we find ourselves in. And I want to thank each and every person listening out there, and thank you for your support and so forth. And bless all of you. Good night.